Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, June 4th, 2015. It's just after 2:30 UTC as we're starting. I'm Sam Minter, and once again, Yvonne Bo is with us. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo! Yo, yo, yo! Woohoo! Yeah! We're here, baby!
Yeah, yeah.
That's not the way this is supposed to work. Okay, query. Well,
No. But, you know, our real show, we're going to talk about
stuff.
Well,
we're going to try not to have technical problems. You know, look, I was just off. You know, last week my computer during show, you guys
crashed a couple times.
Crashed in the middle of the show.
Oh, yeah,
and then
you
crashed
and then I had to reboot too. So it was
you
one
had
of
to
each.
Reboot and my computer actually like crashed multiple times since then. Which for a Mac is not normal. So I actually, you know, it happened twice today, which was like extremely unusual. So I called Apple support and I tried to do a number of things. They recommended one thing. We did a couple of things and one, you know, other recommendation. And so try to see if that works.
Well, good. Yeah, cross your fingers. You know, because whatever. Yep. You know, and we are going to get to the follow up on the Patriot Act and all of that stuff that went on in the last week. We're going to talk about election 2016. There are a bunch of new developments, as there are most weeks these days. And then we haven't talked about the economy in a while, so we'll do our third major segment on the economy, and then we'll do a lightning round. It'll be fun and exciting.
In lightning, and we're doing the lightning.
But
lightning, we're going to light the lightning. No, I can't sing it. Okay, all right. Well, anyway,
you know, we usually do a couple little personal things in this initial segment. So I will mention a couple things. You know, one is of course I don't have the bell again because every time I find the damn bell. My son steals it and hides it again.
It's a very, very lovely gesture on his part.
Yeah, so
yes.
But the other thing, and so I'll find it periodically. Like one time, you know, it's in the back of a closet somewhere. Another time, it's in his bedroom under the bed. Another time, it's wherever, you know, and this goes on. And I find the bell and I'm like, oh, great, I found the bell and I'll bring it back to my office. And it's usually there for about somewhere between 12 and 24 hours and then it's gone again. But I'll tell you, this has escalated.
So he is in an escalation mode. He is going mano a mano.
Well, he thinks this is a fun game, but here's the thing.
I do agree. It is quite fun to see.
It's not just the bell.
Uh-huh.
Because the latest thing to disappear.
Oh boy.
Are my keys.
Oh shit.
My house key, my car key, my little dongle from work that I use to log in remotely.
Did you have one of those? Okay, I would suggest, could you buy one of those? What the hell's that thing that you use with a phone in order to find your keys?
Oh, that is a good idea. But see, here's what's happened. At this moment, I have not seen my keys in 4 days.
So how the hell did you go to work?
Well, I have a spare key. I borrowed the key. Like normally, like we got, you know, a number of keys with the car, and my wife keeps one and I keep one, and so I've been using my wife's copy of my car key, and a spare house key. But I haven't found. Yeah, but I don't have a spare of the little thing I use to connect to work, and there are a couple things like that. But look, here's the deal. So the first couple days, I'm thinking I misplaced it. I'm thinking, you know, I went to put it down next to the bed and I kicked it under the bed or something. And I couldn't find it in those places. And then like a couple days in, I'm like, Alex, did you hide my keys? And he's like, yeah.
Well, at least he fessed up rather quick. Man, he really failed under the interrogation. I mean, he just folded
he doesn't hide the fact that he hid them. He hides the fact of where he hid them. Okay, so, you know, at one time I'm like, okay.
Did you give a reward to,
show me where you hid the key. And so then he's like, I'm like, did you hide it under the stairs? Because we've got like a little closet under the stairs that goes out in a little corner. And we have it set up as like a little playroom for him under the stairs. And he's like, yeah. And so he leads me down under there. And of course, you know, it's a small space. So I'm like crunched down and blah, blah, blah. And he's bringing out some toys and he's playing. And I'm like, and I bring out the flashlight on my phone to try to look for it. And he's like, no, don't use the flashlight. Of course, I used the flashlight. It wasn't there. Little liar. Okay, he just wanted me to come in there to play with his toys underneath the stairs. So then, you know, this goes on. And then, then I'm asking him about it the next day. Because I had to leave for work. So I grabbed my wife's keys and I left. Right. You know, so the next day I'm asking him about this. And I'm like, okay, so where are the keys, Alex? I don't know.
Oh, God.
I'm like, so wait. Now, did you or did you not hide them?
Yep.
Yes. But you don't know where they are? No. Nope. Did you forget? Yes.
God, for God's sakes. Really?
So
you need to work on that part. Okay, all right. You're so supposed to remember where you hit them.
And let's keep in mind, like, the search for missing keys, fundamentally, like, okay, if I had misplaced my own keys, then there are a certain set of places I would look, you know, by the bed, under the bed, you know, where I come in the front door, in the living room where I tend to sit, you know, places like that I would look. Given that he's hidden the keys, I have no freaking clue anywhere in the damn house.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, so I don't know. Hopefully, eventually, I'll find the damn keys. If not, I guess I have to replace everything. I don't know.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Well, look, in your defense, like, I remember a couple of years ago, like, one of my nieces did that to my dad. Mm-hmm. You know? Hey, he couldn't find the keys for about a year.
Oh, great. That's in my future.
So,
well, you know, and now I know also, if I find the damn keys, I have to make sure I, like, hide them myself. Otherwise, right. The next time he finds them, they're going to be gone again.
Well, you got to get that little square thing, whatever the hell it's called.
There are a number of products that do this that have, like, a little thing that you attach to your keys, and then you can, like, contact them through Bluetooth or something and make
exactly.
them beep or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. I think that would be a prudent acquisition.
I think it might be. I'm going to have to think about that. I'm going to have to think very seriously about that. Anyway, that's my little personal story of the week. Fun stuff. Yeah, so I have no bell. I have no keys. I got nothing. I got nothing. Anyway, we'll be back. We're like I said, Patriot Act, election, economy, lightning round coming up. We'll start off with the Patriot Act shenanigans right after this. Hey, you listeners, we know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. That's spelled ABULSME. Or tweet at us. I'm at abelsmay. And Yvonne is at IMBOU. That's IMBOU. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets. So get right on that. Okay. We are back. And for those of you who don't know who... Yeah, or, you know, my son's 5. Like, yeah. The story would sound very different if he was, like, 15 or something.
If he was 15, I mean, time to beat the...
Yeah, well, I probably wouldn't do that. But, anyway, by the time he's 15, he's probably going to be bigger than I am, so...
Probably, sure.
But anyway, not that I would... do that anyway. But I realized I hadn't mentioned the age for those of you who don't know, and the story takes on very different flavors depending on the age of the kid. You know.
Yes, he's definitely five. Yeah, he's five.
Wow. He's playing. He's having fun. I admit this is kind of fun, but it's kind of annoying too.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so when last we left this Patriot Act drama,
we were wondering whether nothing was going to happen, and they did go over the deadline, right?
Yeah, and so basically, I was kind of like slapping myself for not, predicting out this as it played out a little bit better than we did, because the one piece that we were missing last week was sort of, if it expires, what exactly do they have to do to bring it back? And look, the bottom line is, what happened is, Paul was able to, through various delaying tactics, force the missing of the deadline. But there was enough support for the USA Freedom Act, which was the quote-unquote reform bill, that previously the Republican Senate had blocked to have that pass once the Republican leadership dropped their objections to it. Now, they never entirely dropped their objections. They always said that they would have preferred to leave things exactly how they were, but they sort of recognized at a certain point that they didn't have the votes to leave things how they were, but they did have the votes for the reform bill.
But here's the thing. I am so confused as to why the hell. I mean, the four amendments that McConnell proposed, from my perspective, were ridiculous.
So I barely paid attention to the amendments because I knew from the get-go they weren't going to pass. So what were they?
He was like, for example, trying to, you know, as one of the reforms was to add an advocate to the FISA court. He was adamantly opposed to that.
Okay, so the one amendment was to remove that.
Yeah. The other one was to declassify certain, information that they were like wanting the decisions to be public or something like that. That also went down. I can't remember the other two, but the thing is that they were all, you know, they were all amendments that improved transparency.
You mean they were amendments to undo changes that would improve transparency?
Correct.
Right.
Right. And I'm just like, why is he so for removing this, you know, for doing these amendments?
Well, clearly because he thinks the reforms to improve those bits of transparency are a mistake, so he doesn't want to do them.
You really think that's the case?
Well, I do. This is why McConnell went so far along the road of trying to block the USA Freedom Bill entirely, because he didn't want any of the reforms that it implemented. Now, in a second, we'll talk about how little those reforms actually are in the first place.
Well, but let's face it, in an age where everything has been going the other way, and to have actually a movement in the other direction is, you know, is movement. Okay, all right.
We'll get to that in a second. But first of all, yeah,
you know, I think the banning of the mass data collection, you know, that they were doing, devolving it to them, requiring a court order by FISA in order to get the records from the phone companies. Now, here's one thing.
Were the amendments. He was undoing those things.
Right, he was undoing those things. Now the question that I've – here's the one thing that I've been baffled by this whole thing. As far as I know, the phone company stored all that information before anyway. I guess it's requiring them to keep it.
Yeah. So here's the bit. First of all, the phone companies kept it, but there was some question for how long they kept it. There was also a question of whether or not some phone company would decide, as a competitive advantage, because people are so much more conscious about privacy than they have been in the past, to offer a plan with the advantage of, we don't store your data. And so this is preemptively making a requirement of the phone companies to keep data so that they can't do that. And so no phone company could arise either, and no new competitor could come up and say, hey, we're the privacy phone company.
So let's be clear about this. What you're saying is that what they were doing was making the requirement to keep it, because before there was no requirement to keep it, correct?
Right. So before, it was completely up to the discretion of the phone companies in terms of how much they kept and for how long.
Okay. Okay.
And so this is requiring it. So, you know, and basically this is because with the previous arrangement, the government was sucking in that data. So they didn't really care. If the phone companies didn't keep it, the government would still have it.
Right.
Now the government is promising not to keep that data. Now, I want to be very clear about this too, because this is one of the things. They are promising not to keep the information under Section 215 of the previous law, which expired and is replaced by this. But there are still other things that allow them to do it anyway, including an executive order. So there's actually, you know, the White House made a big show about this. The National Security Agency made a big show about this. But, you know, there are other authorities whereby the government could keep that information anyway. So there's quite the possibility that, in fact, nothing changes. And also, as you know, there were a number of things, even when the law was expiring last weekend, that people pointed out. For instance, the previous law allowed an exemption for, even if the program was sunsetted, they could continue collecting information that was related to investigations that had started prior to the sunset. But the way they define the investigations, for instance, is, this is our investigation against Al-Qaeda. Okay, so it's not particularized. So there were a number of loopholes where, if the government had decided to do so, which they may have, because of course this is all top secret, so we don't know, they could have continued, they could to this day continue doing absolutely everything they did before, just under a different argument for why they can.
Okay.
And so that's why a lot of the privacy advocates, the groups that, you know, the EFF, the ACLU, all of these kinds of groups had been for a previous version of the USA Freedom Act from last year sometime. However, when it went through the House of Representatives, basically there were a whole bunch of amendments to it, and all of the privacy groups jumped off and said, you know, this is no longer useful. It's all show. It changes things on the surface. It changes what you call things. But in the end, it doesn't fundamentally keep the government from doing anything it wanted to anyway. It doesn't it doesn't move us back to a world where we're talking about individualized warrants to go after a particular person. It allows the dragnet to continue. Also, you know, all of this talk the last week or two has all been about phone calls. And says absolutely nothing about all the programs that are out there to trap internet data. And arguably, the internet data is much more important at this point. The NSA themselves had sort of said, we don't need 215 anymore. We'll probably shut it down anyway. So, you know, my daughter at some point had asked for, you know, what the hell is going on with all this stuff? On the day where, you know, they were coming back from their vacation and they were having all the floor debates and all of this shenanigans were going on. And the summary I gave was basically a lot of noise about nothing. A lot of people are going to yell. You're going to hear a lot of people on both sides. You're going to see the national security people saying this is eviscerating our security and this is a huge victory for the terrorists and we're going to be at risk because of this stuff.
Which is total bullshit.
And meanwhile, you're going to see the privacy people saying, you know, what a huge victory they got by letting the provisions expire under the Patriot Act 215. But in the end, when all is said and done, there will be no changes of any real significance.
Well, the changes were small. I mean, let's be realistic. I will go
more than say they're small. The changes are cosmetic. They change the look of something without changing anything underlying.
I don't know if it's completely cosmetic. Can I be honest? I mean, look, the fact that and you know, there's certain things that like I said, it depends on how it's done in practice, okay? You know, one of the things we were talking about was the fact that FISA court basically, I mean, you showed up at FISA court, you made a request. I mean, it was a rubber stamp.
Yes.
That was one of the issues. And, you know, now they, you know, one of the things is to place advocates on the other side in order to not let all the requests be a rubber stamp. Now, you know, like everything, it depends on how it's it depends on how it actually works, right?
Yeah, I mean,
depends on the zealousness of the other advocates. It depends on the tools that they are allowed to have, and so forth and so on, in order to be able to challenge.
Well, and just judging from how these kinds of things have worked in the past, when you've had, for instance, the defense attorneys at Guantanamo, they have their hands tied behind their back. There's so much they can't access. There's so much they can't see. And even when you do that, you have potentially judges who are inclined to support the government anyway. So you're right. It depends on the implementation. But I just got to say, from the history of what we've seen here, I'm not hopeful that there's going to be a substantial change in anything.
I'm going to say, in real terms, I just don't know. I mean, I just don't. I mean, were the changes positive? Yes. How positive are they? The degree of whether it's tiny or whether it's significant, I'll withhold judgment on that. I just don't know.
I think the answer is, at best, it's a symbolic victory. Like you said, at least they're giving lip service to doing some sort of reform, which is more than we've seen in years here. Right. But I think it is primarily a symbolic thing where, you know, okay, they passed some reforms, but it's the kind of reforms that don't have a substantial effect on actually curtailing the government, and in some cases might actually give them more power than they had before.
Well, I don't know. I'm always cup half, at least I got a few drops. Well, look, it'd been public opinion had been in the fact that people don't give a shit about losing their privacy, right?
Right.
So the general public, had been not on the bandwagon of doing any reform whatsoever.
Right. So the fact that anything got through at all says something. I agree with that. I agree with that. And like I said, it's a symbolic thing, but I don't think there's much here beyond symbolism. But sometimes you have to start with symbolism.
Yes. So,
And the fact that a lot of the people on the national security side are crying about how bad this is maybe indicates that, maybe there is something.
I mean, I keep hearing them, pounding the table and moaning and bemoaning it so much that I'm like, look, if they're bemoaning it this much, I mean, I don't think it's just completely for show.
Now, the other thing, though, last week we mentioned that Obama wasn't doing a full court press on this. He wasn't going on national TV telling people to call their congressman.
And he started doing it.
Well, he did a little bit. He never did the national, press conference thing. But his staff for the last week or so absolutely was out. And the thing was, it was complete fear-mongering all over the place. It was all about how if we let this sunset, how bad a blow it is to national security, blah, blah, blah.
The standard spiel. Yeah, I know.
Now, of course, they were for the USA Freedom Act for these reforms. Which is actually one of the reasons I'm suspicious of it, is because so many people in the establishment were like, okay, this is great, including Obama, but there's certainly a lot of people who are against even that. So, we'll see where it was. But in the meantime, you got to see some fun congressional maneuvering and wrangling.
There was some fun congressional maneuvering.
I don't know if you guys have not seen the clips on C-SPAN. I think I tweeted it when McCain and Rand Paul were going at it on the Senate floor. Basically, where McCain kept saying the senator should learn the rules of the Senate.
Yeah, I saw that.
And there's some funny bits. They don't even hide the fact anymore that McCain and Rand Paul hate each other's guts, completely, and have absolutely no respect for each other. And at this point, they're taking every opportunity to make that known. This is just the honorable senator from whatever. It's more like, the honorable imbecile asshole from Kentucky. So, and vice versa. Fun. Yeah, this was a fun time to be watching C-SPAN. I actually watched or listened to C-SPAN for a chunk of this, and always good. There were some good speeches. Rand Paul actually gave a really good speech against all the surveillance state stuff early on in the process on Sunday. He gave a longer rambling speech later that was, you know, whatever. The first one was better, and the second one, he got a lot of flack because at one point he said, I believe a lot of people in this town are actually hoping for a terrorist attack to prove me wrong, and so people jumped on him about that.
Well, you've been going on and on and on forever, for God's sake.
This wasn't the filibuster. That was
No. But I mean, he had been going on. I mean,
he had half an hour to talk.
But what I'm saying is that he had been. I mean, they'd been. How long were they there on Sunday? There was on Sunday, and this took quite a long time. It wasn't like they were there for like 15 minutes and this thing got done.
Right.
You know?
And they were there on a Sunday at the end of their holiday weekend. They did not really appreciate.
No, exactly.
Their holiday week, I should say.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about the election next, so let's save a little bit of the Rand Paul stuff, because there are some potential election implications of this for him. So let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll hit election 2016.
Breaky.
Okay, we're back. So, I was mentioning Rand Paul and the stuff in Congress and the election. One of the things that people were talking about after this was, first of all, he essentially now no longer has, you know, he's got maybe one friend in the Senate. Maybe Ron Wyden still likes him, you know. But for the most part, his fellow senators are not happy with Rand Paul, because in this case, this was a bill that, you know, once we got to the end, I mean, it passed by an overwhelming majority. I forget, it was 77 or something. I forget the exact vote for. You know, so this was an overwhelming bipartisan majority in favor of this USA Freedom Act. He was holding it up. He caused, he caused them to have to come back. He caused them to miss a deadline and thus look stupid. Now, that was McConnell's fault, by the way. Like, he could have switched over and thrown his support behind USA Freedom week ago and avoided all of this.
Right.
So major strategic mistake on his part. But, you know, these people don't like him. The Republican establishment in general doesn't. So I've seen a number of comments saying, you know, good luck on him getting any more money from the Republican National Committee for anything whatsoever, or perhaps more importantly, the Republican National Senatorial Committee, which generally helps bankroll Senate campaigns across the country. And if you remember, the plan is that Rand Paul plans to run both for president and Senate simultaneously, which there was actually a law in Kentucky saying you couldn't be on the ballot for both at the same time. And so there's actually a process going on in Kentucky to change from a primary to a caucus for the Republican nomination in Kentucky, so that Rand Paul wouldn't actually have to appear on a ballot in the primary part of the process.
Okay.
But this isn't all said and done and all tied up yet. And he previously had McConnell's support for that bill, which, you know, McConnell could pull. He hasn't at this point, but McConnell is not happy with Rand Paul right now. Now, McConnell had previously actually endorsed Rand Paul for the Republican nomination as sort of a fellow Kentuckian or whatnot. But now he's not happy.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So he could cause mischief here. Now, you know, what's the worst case scenario that happens here? Well, either Rand Paul could be forced to choose between running for president or running for Senate, which he probably wouldn't like, because I think his plan here is to try to hold on to his Senate seat, because he's not going to be president. I'm sorry.
I think.
You know, he's a long shot at the Republican nomination. And if he won the Republican nomination, he probably wouldn't win the general. There are some scenarios he scrambles things in weird ways. But, you know, he wants to hedge his bets and be able to come back to the Senate, assuming he doesn't win the presidency. Or going beyond that, if you assume he gets the Republican nomination, there's the possibility that he could be on the ballot in 49 states, but not Kentucky.
Ah.
And Kentucky is a state that you would expect the Republican to run away with. But if he's not allowed to be on the ballot in Kentucky, what happens there? Do the Republicans run somebody else in Kentucky?
Maybe.
Maybe. This is not unprecedented, by the way. It hasn't happened since, you know, the 1800s, I don't think, but there were a couple elections where a single party decided to run different people in different states. Now, this did not work out for them.
I would think that would be detrimental. Yes.
Well, because their idea was they would run all of the candidates they thought would best win in each state, and then
they would get the Electoral College.
Well, and then it would get thrown to the House, and then they'd pick the one they wanted in the House.
Right. Yep.
Okay. It did not work out.
It's a strategy.
It is a strategy.
I like
it.
I don't know.
But the Republicans could run somebody else in Kentucky, like whoever's the vice presidential candidate could run in Kentucky, and then presumably they would take care of it. One way or another. But anyway, it's complications you don't really want if you're running for president. You don't want to have to deal with that. Probably they'll work out their problems. Nothing like that will happen. But there's potential for mischief here. And, you know, there's also the question of, you know, are any of the people who Paul may have been courting for money, just going to dry up as sources. Now, he hasn't been doing the best in the world money-wise. Anyway, there have been another number of reports, specifically the one report I saw, and I'm sorry, I don't have the article in front of me, was basically along the lines of Rand Paul doesn't have a billionaire. Most of the other candidates have at least one billionaire ready to support them and throw money into their super PACs. Rand Paul has not been able to get a billionaire on his side yet.
Right. I could see how that could be a problem.
You know, and there's a yet there. You know, there's some billionaires who might go there. I don't know. But all this is additional speed bumps. And people have also been saying, hey, in Kentucky specifically, these national security programs are actually fairly popular. So is Rand Paul putting his Senate seat at risk too? Where, you know, the population of Kentucky being annoyed enough at him for doing these, you know, dovish things, that, you know, somebody will primary him in Kentucky and have him have a real race for his seat in Kentucky as well. So anyway, enough about Rand Paul. The question is whether he's caused himself enough difficulty. You know, he's been loyal to his principles here, which is a noble thing, but does it cost him electorally? And we'll see how it plays out.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. But I think, let's listen. We know he's not going to win the presidency. So, I mean, if they really box him in, I mean, I really don't think. Do you really think he'll give up his Senate seat just to run for president?
I don't think He will work out a way where he doesn't have to choose.
Okay.
Like I said, the worst case scenario there is he can't be on the ballot in Kentucky. There's still the rest of the country.
Right, I get that, but I guess. I mean, okay, all right, fair enough. Yeah.
So, okay, moving on. We talked about this a little bit in previous weeks. I think I talked about it when Jen was a guest here, or a co-host here. Clinton is getting increasing flack from the press for not making herself available, not taking questions, not participating in events that expose her to people who aren't already supporters, essentially. And the question is, has this started to hurt her? 'Cause there are some polls, like, you know, my own analysis, election2016.abelsmay.com, everybody, isn't really showing this yet, although it's showing some hints. But I'm looking at state by state, and it's a lot slower to show. There are a number of national polls showing Clinton slipping a little bit, both against Republicans and against, you know, Bernie Sanders and the like. Now, she's still ahead significantly, but by less than she was. And there are a number of polls that are saying that specifically on questions like, do you believe Clinton cares about people like me, where she's doing really badly? And so the question is she starting to hurt herself by these tactics or not?
And I think it's too early for that. I mean, I've heard the complaints. I get that. But you know what? The thing is that we're so damn early in this thing.
I honestly think it's mostly the press and Republicans.
I don't think anybody else gives a shit.
The Republicans are trying to make hay out of it because, hey, sure, it's something that may look negative for Hillary. The press is making hay out of it because they can't stand the fact she's not talking to them.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think it's a direct, actual hit against her electorally. Oh, Alex is here. Alex is getting pulled away, but as my wife grabbed him, he punched me in the mouth, which was really exciting there.
Well, that's really good. Great.
Yeah, I'm like, ow, that hurt. Okay, bye, Alex.
No, not bye.
Yes, I'm doing podcast right now. I thought you guys were at dinner. Bye.
Oh, no.
The plan had been that they go to dinner while I did the podcast. I don't know what happened.
Apparently, that's failed.
Apparently, that has failed, yes. Anyway, I think that Clinton is showing some weakness. There's no question about it. But we're not at the point where it's dangerous for her yet. And she's obviously doing a cost-benefit analysis that says, like, exposing myself to hostile forums, including both the press and audiences that aren't pre-vetted, is a net negative for me right now, so why bother?
Well, look, here, let me put it to you this way. Look at all the fodder that we have gotten from Jeb Bush's misstatements at this point,
right,
in front of the press. I honestly, at this point, I think Hillary's calculation is probably right. I don't see that there's a positive to gain at this point from giving them that much access yet. All I see are negatives. Because right.
And
nobody...
I think that's exactly her calculation. Like,
yeah,
she may be getting some negative flack for not doing this stuff, but participating in this stuff has basically all downside and very little upside. So
well,
there's no reason to do it.
All the damn
she needs
questions
to.
That she could be hit, where she could say something, you know, by mistake that gives her more negative. But the emails, Benghazi, Whitewater, you know, I don't know, who knows, all this shit, right? I mean, they could take one sound clip from her saying something or whatever and then replay it like 100,000 times. Why give them the opportunity?
Now, don't get me wrong. Eventually, she's going to have to do all
this. Oh, no, she's going to have to. But I'm saying at this earliest stage, there is no upside. All I see is downside. I think she's right.
I
mean, from a strategic point of view.
Yeah, I think that's the game she's playing, and I think that's the smart thing to do right now. Now, at some point, that tipping point will change, and I don't think that's that far away. I mean, you know,
I'd say by September.
I was about to say sometime in the fall.
Yeah. Yeah, in the fall, then she's got to stop this, but you know, by the fall.
But I think she can go through the summer this way.
I think she'll go through. I totally agree. I think she can go through the summer. Nothing. It won't change a damn thing.
Now she's having, she's going to have more and bigger events that are going to slowly ramp up, but she can keep this tight control for a while longer yet. Okay, enough about Clinton. Just to talk about, we just got a couple minutes left in this segment, but just to hit another couple folks, I think we actually mentioned last week, Santorum's in. Huckabee made some comments this week that ruffled some feathers. For those of you who don't know, there's this family, the Dugars, who have a whole bunch of kids, and they had a reality show. And in the last 2 weeks, it turns out that one of the kids was molesting the younger kids in that family.
Jesus, okay.
And so their reality show got put on hiatus.
You think?
The thing is, though, the reaction to it has been, you know, because a lot the molestation happened when the kid in question was himself a minor. So it was basically like, okay, the 13-year-old kid was molesting the 5-year-old. Okay.
Okay.
You know, but now
that's just weird.
Yeah. So anyway, apparently he was molesting a couple of the kids and some family friends too. And it happened like throughout his teenage years, basically. And a lot of weird stuff has come out like about this. Cause this is, you know, a really weird fundamentalist Christian family, and they do this weird homeschooling program. So people have been posting documents about, from the homeschooling program about how, you know, there's actually like a guide. If like an abusive event happens, first determine if the person who was abused did anything to bring this on to themselves. You know, like, did they wear too revealing clothing or whatever?
Oh,
and so in this question, like the kid who was doing the abusing said that part of this was like, you know, his parents made him change the kid's diapers and the temptation was too great. And that they would come out of the bath not wearing clothes.
Oh, so they were supposed to come out of the bath clothed? I mean, what the hell?
I don't know, but you know,
I usually come out of the bath without wearing clothes. It's part of, I mean, I just say it's part of my routine.
Well, and I'm sorry. I mean, you have a young son. I have a son who's a couple years older than him. It is not unusual for them to come out of bath and run around the house a little bit.
Yes.
Before you get clothes on them.
Operating procedure.
This is the nature of kids. And you know, frankly, I don't care. Even if they were older kids, you know, I mean, it's not an acceptable excuse. Oops, I accidentally saw my sister naked, so I had to rape her.
Yeah, not really. Guy, yeah, I would say no.
But anyway, so there was a lot of weird stuff here. And, you know, and they're all about like, you know, they're saying that he's more of a victim than the kids were because blah blah blah, whatever. The presidential angle here is basically Huckabee kind of seems to agree with them, and has been sort of defending them and saying, hey, well, the kid was forgiven, you know, and he was a young man and he didn't know what he was doing and blah blah blah. And so he got a lot of flack from that. Huckabee also stuck his foot in the mouth. You know, people have been talking about Bruce Jenner, you know, as he's transitioned into Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh God, I thought we were gonna avoid that subject, but anyway,
regardless of the rest of that, you know, Huckabee made some comments. This was older, not right this week, but it came out on tape this week, where he was basically saying, you know, criticizing like, you know, transgender people and restrooms and blah blah blah, and said, hey, you know, if they had this stuff when I was a kid, I would have probably found my feminine side and said, hey, I need to shower with the girls. Anyway, so he's gotten in trouble for a bunch of this stuff too as well. Yeah,
nice.
And so Huckabee's been you know being Huckabee. I mean he's the point is like this is not going to change much in terms of support for Huckabee because the people who eat up what he's saying like him anyway. The people who are offended by what he's saying would never consider voting for him.
Well, let's put it to you this way. We're talking about this damn campaign. It's early June, for God's sakes. I mean, it's June. When's Iowa? When the hell is the thing? December?
Well, they're still mutzing around with the dates a little bit. It's probably going to be in January.
January. Okay, January. We got 7 months more of this shit. 7 more months. I mean, this is why Hillary isn't talking out there, because it's going to be a fantastically terrific opportunity for you to put your foot in your mouth for 7 months. I mean, come on, man. I mean, all you could do, like, right now, like, I mean, she's right. All you could do right now is just say something stupid.
And all she has to do...
get replayed over and over.
And all she has to do... is point at the various Republicans. The other one, it was Scott Walker, had a quote the other day, which before I quote it, I will say, looking at it, it looks clear to me he actually was taken out of context, but the quote came up as him basically saying mandatory ultrasounds were just kind of fun things. You know, the mandatory ultrasounds that are being proposed before anybody can have an abortion, you know, and he was actually saying ultrasounds are kind of fun in that you get to see the baby and all that stuff. It was somewhat separated from his comments about the mandatory ultrasound, so it wasn't quite fair. But the point is, most of these things aren't quite fair when you come up to these things.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you can bring up any number of examples from 2012. You know, all it takes is the one comment that can be repeated over and over and over again that gives somebody an impression of you. It doesn't matter if it was correct in context or not. And this is where you're talking about sticking your foot in your mouth.
Exactly.
Jeb Bush was doing the Iraq stuff that caused problems for a week. We got Walker making mistakes. We got Huckabee making mistakes. You know, all of these folks. And it's just, you know, a stray...
And it's early June. And you had 6 more months of having to talk shit.
And all over
the place. And
speaking about that kind of thing, we're over time, but there's one more that I need to say here.
Yes.
Is Lincoln Chafee officially announced that he is running as a Democrat today. Yesterday, today, whatever. Wednesday, June 3rd, he announced. He used to be a Republican. From Rhode Island, and then he was an independent from Rhode Island, and now he's running for president as a Democrat. So he's got an interesting history here. But the fun stuff is, he came out and he stated a bunch of different things in his announcement, let's say. But, you know, for example, he says Edward Snowden should be allowed to come home. Okay, and, you know, I kind of agree with him, but it's not exactly a popular position, okay? He was talking about free trade deals and wanting peace and all that kind of stuff, but the thing that got more attention than anything else he said in his announcement for president is that he believes the United States should switch to the metric system right now.
Well, there you go.
And look, you know, and so a lot of people were making fun of him. I tweeted a bunch of stuff about this afternoon, making fun of him too. And by the way, I agree. We should be on the metric system. It's a lot smarter. It makes more sense. But you're announcing you're running for president of the United States in 2016. You don't make one of the central planks of your platform. Let's all switch to the metric system. You've got to be kidding me. And now, you know, no one else. You know, and you're running as a Democrat against Hillary Clinton and no one knows who the fuck you are. Except now everybody knows you're the metric system guy.
Well, shit, you know, he should add that, like, you know, put this another plaque and just go back to the gold standard.
Well,
there you go.
You got Paul for that.
Right.
Although,
I know. But
he hasn't officially said that like his father did, but, you know, we know. Come on. But no, it's not the gold standard. Look, the metrics, and look, he has arguments about how it would enable better integration with the economies of the rest of the world, blah, blah, blah. Put us.
I'm sorry. You know
be
what?
Symbolically look, joining the rest of the world. Okay, fine, well, whatever.
Look, but that's a bunch of. Listen, what a bunch of bullshit. Look, at this point, listen. I have listen, if you're talking 20, 30 years ago, maybe. At right now, I don't see any thing that the fact that we weigh pounds and they do kilos that is stopping anything like right now that we're doing.
Because for the most part, conversions, everybody can do conversions easily. Now, you know, the last major incident I had on this was that Mars probe about a decade ago that crashed into Mars because somebody forgot to convert feet to meters.
Oh, but those guys are idiots.
Because the Europeans made half of it and the Americans made half of it and they assumed and
but a scientific project should all be done in fucking metrics.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That's moronic. I mean, the U.S. scientists over there should be fucking beaten over the head with a fucking hammer. I'm sorry, but I took a whole bunch of like classes in chemistry, physics, whatever the fuck. We did nothing that was not in metric. Why the hell did those idiot scientists were doing it?
I agree. In any case, the bottom line. Now, there is the argument. Look, you know, it's us, Burma, and Liberia. They're the only three countries in the world that aren't on the metric system at this point.
But here's the reality. Even like most manufacturing that we do use metric. I mean, the
no,
only
no, I know. Look, look again. Bringing it back
like
to the presidential
thermometer
thing.
And how many pounds I weigh. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, I mean, look, the metric system is better. Hey, I believe UTC is better and everybody should do their time in Greenwich Mean Time or Universal Time, but that's not going to happen either. And, you know, if I decided to run for president, that's not the number one thing I'm mentioning. Well, if it was me, maybe it would be. I don't know. But
No. I know what your central plank would be.
What?
You'd kill daylight savings time.
There you go.
That would be your first plank.
You know, if Chafee came out with that as
then
a central plank.
Now we're talking, huh?
No, but anyway, like it's just idiotic. I mean, you like any chance that this guy had of being taken seriously, just evaporated.
He's gonna come back out with a flat tax.
I mean, he wasn't gonna be taken seriously anyway. To be honest, I mean, he's got no traction. I mean, Bernie Sanders, the damn socialist, is polling at 10 times what Chafee's polling at. But you know you. If you wanted to come out of the gate in a way that said to anybody, hey, take me seriously, I'm a serious challenger against Hillary, or at the very least, you know, take my issues seriously and I know I'm not going to win. Like, Sanders knows he's not going to win, but he wants to get his issues out there and part of the discussion. Chafee wants us to talk about the metric system right now? Really?
Yes.
All of the problems in the world, you know, right now. Now, I reckon.
Speaking
of
the Republican candidates,
I do want to say, I recognize that in the 70s, the metric system was an actual big political issue in this country when we were on a road where we were trying to force the whole country to switch, and the whole country rebelled against that, basically. And, well, it became a partisan issue. The Republicans were against it. The Democrats were for it. And as soon as it became a partisan issue, it was done. It was over. It was toast. But it was a big issue in the 70s. Guess what? It's not a big issue.
No, not anymore. So I'm looking at it right now that the total tally of officially declared Republican presidential candidates, officially declared, and this, by the way, does not include Jeb Bush,
yep.
Chris Christie, or Rick Perry, or Scott Walker,
yep.
Okay, is 19.
Wait, no, it's 9 of the officially declared big guys.
No, I'm looking at official big guns, but I'm talking, I see a list here that I pulled up. This is the list of officially Republican, there's a whole bunch of very small people in here, but that are declared Republican.
Oh, it's got to be much bigger than that. You're
Skip
still looking
Andrews,
it up.
Skip Andrews, Michael Bickelmeyer, Kerry Bowers, Ben Carson, Dale Christensen, Ted Cruz, John Demet Jr., Mark Everson, Carly Fiorina, Lindsey Graham, Chris Hill, Mike Huckabee, Michael Kinlaw. Gee, I don't know a whole bunch of these people. George Pataki, Rand Paul, Michael Petio, Marco Rubio, Brian Russell, Rink Santorum. So those are officially declared that I have on this list at 19.
There's got to be more than that, because I my memory was there were hundreds at this point.
Declared?
Right. Hundreds that have registered with the FEC.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. That's why we only talk about, like, the top... Yeah, you know, like if you restrict that by you know, people who actually have a shot, you know.
Apparently they're narrowing this down to people who supposedly have a shot. Like, for example, look at this guy over here. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, Kerry Bowers.
No,
veteran and volunteer spokesperson with the Americans for Fair Taxation. Former military man with a long career in the U.S. Air Force, Kerry Bowers has experience not only in the armed forces, but as a police dispatcher. I guess that's good for president. Businessman, and in many other fields. Okay, that's one. Never heard of this guy. Dale Christensen, international entrepreneur and business professor. I never heard of this guy. John Dumet. Do you know this guy?
Nope.
Constitutional Republican and strong conservative. Hailing from the state of California, John Dumet is a constitutional Republican who has become disenfranchised with both the Republican and Democratic Party. So why the fuck are you running as a Democrat? I mean, as a Republican. Anyway. All right. So I don't know. So there's a lot of people. Jesus Christ. I didn't realize there's so many other people. Good Lord.
Yeah, there are tons and tons and tons of people. You're already looking at a restricted list.
What do we declare? Like, so basically, what should I just go ahead and declare?
I think you have to pay a couple thousand dollars to file.
How much?
I think it's a couple grand.
Well, I don't know. We could try to raise the money. Well, let me put it to you this way: there sure as hell is a lot less people in the list that they've got for Democrats. The Democratic list is, you know, is a lot shorter. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up the official FEC list, but I'm not going to find it in time. Anyway there are tons of people. It doesn't matter. Because, most of them are joke candidates. They're only a handful that matter at all for this, you know. This is Sam from the future. I did take the time to look up the official information at FEC. For those of you who are interested, the URL is www.fec.gov/data/candidatesummary.do with the C and the S capitalized in candidate summary, one word. And you can see there all of the candidates who are officially registered to run for any federal office. So the first filter you want to do is filter it down to candidates for president. You'll find that there are 377 of them, or at least there were as of June 4th. Second, if you want to look at the Republicans, filter for REP on the party designation, and you'll find that there are 91 candidates registered as running for president as a Republican right now. For reference, there's 65 running as Democrats. You can then sort by how much money they've raised. Of course, this is something that only has to be disclosed every few months, so it's not real time or anything, and they can submit their forms. It's like, whatever. You know, 12 Republicans have reported a non-zero amount of money raised for their campaign. And just for reference, those 12, number one, Ted Cruz. Number two, Ben Carson. Number three, Marco Rubio. And then number four, Mark Everson. Any idea? I don't know. Number five, Rick Santorum. And then everybody else on this list is a no-name. We've got Christopher Hill, Dale Christensen, Pogo Allen Reese, Lowell Fellier, Silva Stagg, Kerry Bowers, Michael Bickelmeyer. Interesting, huh? On the Democratic side, there are only two of those 65 Democrats who are in the race who have non-zero totals amount of money at this point. And surprisingly, neither one of them is Hillary Clinton. We have Willie Carter and Karen Swanson. It's just because I guess Hillary hasn't done her first quarterly money report yet. And anyway, you'll notice also, you know, hey, 91 plus 65, that's still a small fraction of the 377 candidates. So most of them are running as various independent or made up parties or whatever. They're a bunch of, you know, weirdos here. And to Yvonne's question about running, as far as I could tell, I couldn't actually find a fee. It looks like you can go fill out the paperwork and run for president. I think it signs you up for some reporting commitments, but fec.gov/info/forms.shtml if any of you want to run for president or senator or Congress. Have fun. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway,
in terms of serious Republican candidates who's you would have heard their name before because they either held previous elective office at the national level or they're like a business person like Fiorina or Carson or somebody, we're on the order of just under 20 right now. And we've got like three or four on the Democratic side.
Oh, man, this will be fun. All right.
Okay, let's take a break. We went way over on that, as we usually do. We'll be back, and we'll talk about the economy. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we're back.
Well, so I thought we were going to do like one of those shows where we keep forgetting a segment, but no, we're going to talk about the economy, and I'm going to briefly talk about the economy. I've got the brains, you've got the looks, banks make lots of money. So they revised the Q1 GDP number down to a negative, what the heck was it? It was negative, it was like a negative almost like around 1%. But here's the thing, okay, all right. Look, there's a reporter in CNBC. Steve Leisman, who had done some analysis and had been questioning the GDP numbers, especially the data with the seasonality for Q1, that historically, for whatever the hell reason, something in the data that keeps distorting Q1 data and that it's always lower than the rest of the year. Okay?
Okay.
The other day, he had published that, and it had come back that, who the heck publishes GDP data right now? I can't remember exactly. But they came back and said, you know what? His analysis is right. There is something that we are doing wrong with how we're collecting data that is showing Q1 skewed negatively consistently. Okay? And which is why, given that admission right now, which is why I take that thing with a grain of salt right now. It's just been just something that for whatever the hell reason, if you look at every year, the last 15, 20 years, the Q1 data always looks really low.
Well, and then isn't this actually already the revised number?
Yes. And I'm talking even the revised number. They're saying that even the revised number is wrong.
Okay. So what you're saying is you don't believe it's really negative. Are they going to revise it again? Right. Or are you arguing that?
No, they're not going to revise. I think here it is. The mysterious case of Q1 weak data for 30 years. Okay. All right. Was the article. It's on the CNBC website. It's written by Steve Leisman.
over the past 30 years, first quarter growth has been by far the weakest of the four, averaging just 1.87%, while the economy has grown 2.7%, according to CNBC analysis. Several economists contacted by CNBC said if the data were properly adjusted for seasonal variables, such a difference would not show up over a three-decade span. Okay, I mean, we're talking over 30 years. We're not talking like, you know, a couple of times. Q1 GDP growth tends to be the lowest of the four quarters, said Tom Stark, manager of real-time research. Stark was one of three economists who duplicated CNBC's results. He said that statistically, the result seems fairly robust over a number of alternative samples. Officials at the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which tabulates and compiles GDP data, initially declined to comment to CNBC. But after the story was published, Brent Moulton, associate director for National Economic Accounts, said even though the data is adjusted for seasonal patterns, it can still show so-called residual seasonality. BEA is currently examining possible residual seasonality in several series, which may lead to improvements in the regular annual revision to GDP that is scheduled.
Okay.
So bottom line is that don't read too much into the Q1. A lot of economists have established that there is just something screwy with how we're measuring it. And, you know, it normalizes over the year, but it just, I don't know. It's just we've had this consistently happen over apparently the last 30 years. So
bottom line, you don't think there was really negative growth in Q1?
No. And here's a metric that came out yesterday just to show you how the economy has been stronger than it looks like in that about that Q1.
Because when people define recessions and stuff, they don't do seasonal adjustments. Yeah, it's the raw numbers anyway, right?
Yes, correct. Look, we had this thing where autos, okay, they came out with auto sales figures for May. Auto sales were at close to an all-time record annual rate in the month of May. And the trough of the recession, is that the right way to say it?
Trough.
We were down to an annual rate of about 10 million cars a year, down for about 15 million before the peak. We just hit about last month with sales going over 17 million annual. I'm talking about a 70% boost from the bottom of the recession. It's the fastest annual rate it's been like in about 15 years. The previous time it was this high was after like September 11th, where a whole bunch of auto companies rolled out like massive like incentives at zero for everything. That's the only other time it's been like this. So, you know, with that kind of number going around, I just don't see it. The other thing is that during the rest of the year, you're going to see some normalization in the economy because we had a big impact from currency. Okay, all right? The U.S. dollar got really, really strong, really, really fast over 6 months against the ruble, against the euro, against a whole bunch of other currencies. That eased somewhat in this quarter, and that's going to show up in economic growth during these next months. So I just, you know, I wouldn't worry about
it. So you still think my prediction and this year's prediction show that we'll have a recession this year with two negative quarters? That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Not with 17 million freaking cars going out on an annual rate for May. No way. No freaking way.
I have to figure out something to do.
Because
I have to get my prediction
nothing
right.
That gets you arrested.
Oh, yeah. There is that problem. How can I cause a recession without doing anything illegal?
Jeez. Without doing anything illegal. I can't come up with anything.
Okay, so enough about that. Real quick, Greece, Europe, Euro, anything worth noting? I know there was more talk about Greece.
I think that everybody's come off the ledge. Okay, all right. Both, you know, I heard
Greece announced they were going to default or something.
Oh gosh, they've come back from the brink. They're all like trying to sit down and work out a deal. The Greeks have gone and admitted to everybody, well, you know, we really don't want to leave the Eurozone. The Eurozone people said, well, we don't really want you to leave. And everybody's been like now trying to like sit down and cut some kind of a deal, which I guess eventually it will happen. I think there's just been a lot of posturing, but in the end, something's going to be worked out where, you know, Greece is going to get some money and things will work out and, you know, Greece is staying in the euro at this point, as far as I can tell. And I just, you know, everybody's just been backing off all the, how do I say, very aggressive talk, you know, on both sides. So
how about the UK? Yeah. UK doing anything?
I don't think the UK is leaving the eurozone. For all the talk that they do, I just, you know, don't see it. As a matter of fact, I mean, like right now, the fact that UK is not in the eurozone is causing them a number of headaches in certain aspects. I don't know if I can't remember if I talked about my wife's visa ordeal with the UK in recent months. And a lot of people have been complaining about how complicated it is to get a visa to go to the UK because you get one of the places where they had been missing out on a lot of tourism was China. So you're from China, right? So you want to go apply for a visa to go for tourism, okay? Well, you can apply for the Schengen visa to go to your EU zone, get to 29 countries, okay? And really, do you want to go through the same process again to go to the UK for one country? So a lot of people were doing just bypassing going to UK and just going to continental Europe vacation.
Right.
Impactful. Finally, I think that the UK agreed to some kind of agreement where at the moment that if Chinese citizen, at least a Chinese citizen, you know, asks for a Schengen, they can get a UK visa at the same time. Okay. But still, you know, the fact that that's a situation is quite, you know, painful, you know, to the UK. And there's a lot of other things like that, which are quite painful to the UK. So, you know, I think that I don't see that them pulling out. I mean, them pulling out further is going to cause even the situation to be worse. So, I don't see them doing that at this point.
Okay, so that wraps it up for the economy, I think. We're going to come back, and we will do a lightning round, and where we just mix up all this random stuff that we have left that we want to talk about for a couple minutes. So back after this. Okay, we are back. It is time for another lightning round. Yvonne, you start.
I start. Oh, crap. Okay, Johnny Ive got promoted.
Yes. Okay. And so there's a lot of speculation on, well, they reorganized and they made him like CDO, Chief Design Officer, and they brought up a couple new people to take over the hardware and software side of the design stuff underneath him. And so there's a lot of speculation that says, okay, is this really him moving up, or is this him moving up in preparation to move out because he wants to retire and move back to the UK? What do you think?
I think it was the... Look, I really think that Johnny is very dedicated to Apple at this point. I know it's a very big – from the articles I read, the interviews, it is a big burden for him. I think it's more Tim Cook trying to ease that burden to a certain extent. Let him have his creativity. Let him do that. But, you know, move the day-to-day management to somebody else. Have a couple of strong people, which apparently, I mean, a lot of the stuff talking about was delegated to people who have a reputation for being quite strong. So I think it's a way to ease the pressure on Johnny. And I mean, in a job like that, I mean, let's face it. I mean, the pressure is
out
of control. I mean, let's be realistic here. I mean, the pressure that's on Johnny Ive, given that Steve Jobs passed away, is of outsized proportions.
Yeah, because everybody believes that, you know, he's basically the carrier of the torch for Jobs's level of standards for
things. Absolutely.
You know, like, for instance, there's news reports today that apparently the new version of the Apple TV will not be at WWDC next week because it's not ready for prime time. So somebody had to make that call.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's probably Johnny who made that call.
You know, so, yeah, and look, completely aside of whether he actually has a plan to retire in a year or something like that, you need a succession plan for these kinds of things. And for these kinds of high-level positions, you want it to be people that people have heard of. So they want to get these two guys who are under Ive, they want to get them in front of people so people know who they are and have some feeling of trust in them. They want them to speak at some of these Apple events so that, that guy, we know what that guy does. That guy's good. You know, whereas for the most part, both of these guys had very limited public profile before now.
So. They did. But I guess, I don't know. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be. Look, there have been a number of lieutenants, strong lieutenants of Steve that have retired. Okay, before, not the first person. I mean, one of them happened to be. I remember Avi Tavanian. I can't remember how to pronounce it. Tavanian. Yeah, Tavanian.
Ding, so, ding, ding. Yeah. Finish
so,
up.
So anyway. My point is that, you know, it's a very high pressure job. I'm sure at some point he wants to leave it, but I don't know if now is going to be the time. So anyway,
there you go. My turn. I just wanted to mention because we didn't mention it last week. Gay marriage passed in Ireland, which is the first country to legalize gay marriage through a popular vote. There are other countries who've done it in other ways. But it's one of these where you feel kind of surprised by it because Ireland doesn't particularly have the reputation of being the most liberal socially in the world. But there you go. And so I don't have a lot more to say about this other than this is another thing that is not just progressing in the United States. We're expecting a Supreme Court decision anytime now, sometime this month. But worldwide, there are a number of countries that have been moving forward on gay marriage as well. Now, having said that, there are, of course, a lot of places where it's completely the opposite direction. But you do see a lot of movement on this, and it's interesting to watch how quickly this movement has happened in the United States and elsewhere. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
No, it's been fast and furious. I'm surprised even me. So,
okay, your turn.
Bo Biden. So
what? Bo Biden. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, this was, Vice President Joe Biden's son,
46
died of brain cancer. And of course, everybody's been talking about the fact that, Biden also lost his wife and daughter, many, many decades ago at this point, but
it was about 40 years ago. I mean, it's like right. I mean, it was right around. I think it was 1972, if I remember correctly.
And Bo Biden was in the car crash that killed his mother and his sister, and survived with fairly serious injuries, but recovered.
That's messed up, man. I can't imagine what Joe Biden must be going through with this. I don't know. I mean, you know. You lose your wife, you lose your daughter, and then you lose your son like that. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I've always really liked Joe Biden. I mean, he's regardless of where you feel he is on political issues. And I tend to actually agree with him on a lot. He's always comes across as like a nice guy. Sometimes a little creepy, but a nice guy, you know.
Do the hug thing.
Yeah, but a guy who means well. He's trying to do his best. He's trying to be friendly.
Here's the other thing, though. You know, you meet all these politicians that get so fucking rich while they're living, right? I mean, if you saw like like Joe Biden's like financial statement when he became vice president, it's not that he was like destitute, but good Lord, I mean, he sure as hell was not rich like almost every other politician that gets to a level where he's gotten to. I'll tell you what, he's a working guy, he had a salary, he had a house, had a big mortgage, and had, you know, basically was just figuring out how to pay the bills and take care of stuff, you know, that's it, you know? Wasn't no, like, you know, multimillionaire going in there, so...
Yeah, you really feel for him, and also, you know, of course, this, you know, we'd been talking about the last year on, you know, of course, whether Biden was going to jump into the presidential race.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
And, well, the thing is, now... it's somewhat clear now. I mean, this was diagnosed in 2013. It went into remission and only came back in the last few months.
Yeah.
But you know, they kept this quiet. I'm sure some people in the press knew and kept it quiet as well. But basically, this was not a public thing. But, you know, Joe's had other things on his mind the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, he's kind of played it coy, like, you know, hey, I might still run. I'm still thinking about it, but you know, he's had this. This stuff going on. So,
I mean, he would become president at age what, 74? For God's sakes, if he were to run and win,
yeah,
that'd be yeah,
yeah. So, yeah. You and I have talked before. We didn't think he was going to run in the end. You know, because you know he's done it. He's been there. I think he knows this isn't his time, but you know, with all this other stuff going on, he probably wasn't really seriously thinking about it at all. You know, although his son was in remission until like a month ago, so who knows? But you know, I just don't see it happening at this point. Now, I don't know. Again, if Hillary starts screwing everything up, you may see that change, but. I wouldn't bet on it.
No, I wouldn't either.
Okay. My turn again.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention this, you know, we were talking about my son earlier and these various things, but I saw a tweet or an article or something about, you know, a program for the iPad and iPhone that basically, look, you know, people always complain about people getting distracted by their phone and doing too much stuff or going to dinner and everybody's looking at their phone. And
I'm waving at you.
Okay. Bye. And there he is again.
Yeah.
He was just waving at me. Anyway, and people looking at their phones instead of talking at dinner. So this was a program that is intended to combat that. It's called Forest. And the idea is that you go into this program and you plant a tree. And what does this do? Basically, all it does is put a timer on your phone, and you can set it from anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours. And at the end of that time, you get a tree that is in your little forest, and you try to grow a forest. But here's the thing. If you leave the program or use your phone for anything else whatsoever, the tree dies.
Oh, God.
So this is the basic idea.
Well, it's a little bit aggressive.
So the notion is, you know, you're at dinner or whatever, and you don't want to be distracted by your phone. You start a 30-minute tree growing, right? And so therefore, you're discouraged from touching your phone. But here's what happened, of course, is my son discovered this program.
You're just killing trees like a freaking...
No. Completely the opposite. He will go in and he'll take my phone and start a tree so that I can't look at the phone and I have to pay attention to him.
Well, he's a genius.
There you go. So all the time, I'm like, you know, I'm going to use my phone. And he's like, nope, tree's growing.
Well, I will say this. There was a more the other day I saw this one thing where they had this way that, you know, people would show up at a dinner table and you would stack the phones
middle
of the table. And basically, whoever checks the phone first has to pay the check.
Yeah. Yep. I've seen that too. Now, you know, frankly, I think our family would die. Like, when our family goes out to dinner, all of us, including my 5-year-old son, all have our devices out and are doing stuff with them. Now, we also talk sometimes about what we're doing on their phones, but the phones are out constantly. And I know, okay, we should talk to each other, but who the hell wants to talk to your family? Come on. Well, and anyway, so this program is interesting. You guys check it out. It's actually kind of fun. Right. But anyway, so Yvonne, your turn again.
Oh boy, Silk Road.
Yes,
dude. I mean, come on, life in prison. Now, I will say this. I saw that there was a lot of accusations, and they didn't bring those to trial, that this guy actually tried to have a whole bunch of people killed. But I didn't see him prosecuted for that.
That's how they caught him, though, right? Now, was it a sting, or was he actually trying to get somebody killed?
I can't remember exactly how they caught him.
There was a server misconfiguration, blah, 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 something, something. But they also, anyway, there was a bunch of stuff going on. It's a complicated case. But I think that, like you said, he got life in prison.
Of parole.
And it's like, this brings up the whole sentencing thing in our country is just nonsense in general, because like they're crimes that
But I've never heard such a harsh sentence for something like this.
I mean, people get less for murder.
Yes. Is why I am just absolutely profoundly shocked by the sentence. And as a matter of fact, the last few years, we've been getting, sentencing guidelines that used to exist that removed, discretion in, trials were done away with a few years back. Not that they still didn't follow them to a certain extent, but there has been more discretion inserted into sentencing than there used to be. And I just was like just absolutely shocked that, I mean, the sentence was life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. Like, I mean, he was clearly guilty of this.
Now,
there's some question of there's some arguments that, okay, maybe, it shouldn't be as illegal, but it is. But, sentencing is just completely
trying to
out.
Get people killed.
Well, yeah. If in fact he was trying to put out a hit on somebody,
and it
wasn't an entrapment kind of deal. But in general, the reason they went after him was not that specifically. The reason they went after him was he was running a darknet site where people could buy all kinds of illegal stuff, from drugs to hits to everything in between. And I understand. I just think the sentencing is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, because it said 7 drug and conspiracy counts. I mean, I guess I don't know. He also awaits trial in Baltimore in a murder to hire plot.
There you go.
So this is not related to the murder to hire plot. So this is just for the drug dealing? Shit. Wow.
Are you starting to think about how much you might get for your drug dealing?
Oh, yeah, of course. Shit.
The other thing, it wasn't one of my 2 minutes I had planned, but I'll just squeeze it in here. The other thing is we had the sentencing for one of Sarnev's friends, the Boston Bomber's friends, who covered for him after, and I forget how much they got, a year in jail or something like that. I forget. But
it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, basically what happened is he became a suspect and they were like, that's my friend. He couldn't possibly have done that. And they hid evidence and lied to the cops to try to protect him. And so now,
I guess about a year is okay. I mean, for that, I mean, it's not the worst sentence in the world. Probably get out early. I mean, given it's a year,
The only thing I wanted to say here, Yvonne, is if you were ever accused of a terrorist act,
you're gonna throw me under the bus.
I will throw you under the bus.
Thanks a lot.
You're done. I'm like, you want to know about Yvonne? Oh, I'll tell you everything. You want recordings? I got recordings. You want phone records? I got phone records. What do you want to know?
You can hear him saying for all these people to go fuck themselves. I got recordings out the ass about that.
There you go. Yeah, and there are all kinds of clips I'm sure I could take from this show
Carly
that would be
Fury
very
is dead? Oh, yeah, look. Listen to him rave against her. Look at this. Listen to these. Look.
Yeah, so just keep this in mind. If you are ever accused of anything, Yvonne, I'm turning you in. Don't come to me to protect your ass.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. It's what friends do. Okay, one final thing that I did intend to say, then maybe one more for you, and then we're done. I finished a movie. And I say finished because this is another one of these. This time it was a foreign film. It was in French. So once again, there were subtitles. So I only watched 10 minutes at a time. So it took me like a month to watch this movie. This is I'm not going to even try to. Well, maybe I'll try. The French name is something like Jeu d'enfance or something like that. The English name is Love Me If You Dare. It's from 2003. And it was labeled. It was categorized as a comedy, and the description called it a romantic comedy. And I forget why it was on my list. It won some awards or something back in 2003. But let me tell you, this is not a goddamn comedy. Okay? This is like an incredibly fucked up film.
That's okay.
Okay? Now, maybe you would say, you know, what did you expect, Sam? It's a French film.
Yes, true.
You know, because, you know, it's like, oh, it's a romantic
French flicks are just very weird. I've seen, like, I remember a number of them, and it just strikes me as how they're just all,
you know, because it's a boy and a girl. They meet each other when they're children, and they do some stuff when they're children, and then they grow up. And, you know, it was labeled as a romantic comedy. So I figure, you know, hey, they're going to have these adventures, and they're going to go away from each other, and they're going to come together again. And in the end, you know, they'll come together, and they'll live happily ever after. Because, you know, that's what happens in romantic comedies, right?
That's an American movie.
That's not what happened.
They probably killed each other in the end, or somebody raped somebody or something. Who knows?
I am not going to give away the ending. I will say, look, it is a very messed up movie. The relationship is incredibly dysfunctional. However, it's actually a pretty well done movie. I have to give it that. So, like, it's actually kind of worth seeing, but it's really screwed up. And I don't know that I'd see it again, but okay, like, if you're into screwed up French movies, go for it.
Okay. I'm sure we got one hell of an audience out there for that.
Okay, you got one more, Yvonne, because I took two in a row just there.
Boston foiled beheading thing. So, yes. So some guy was like, I don't know. I guess they were like investigating him for months, and then they overheard him saying that he's going to behead police officers, and I guess they stopped him, and then they shot him.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I heard. And then I heard today there was a video that apparently showed that he wasn't shot in the back. Was not
right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, if he really had a plot like this, I'm glad they stopped him. As usual, I wish they could have stopped him without killing him. But you know, if he actually had a real life plot and he was planning on going out and killing people, it's better that you stop him than you don't. And I have not dug into this case. There are a number of these sort of cases that have been trumped as foiling terrorist plots that really, you know, really are on the edge of entrapment. Where, you know, they sort of set up, you know, a fake little terrorist website and try to get people interested in it or whatever. From what I've heard, this doesn't sound like one of those. But I honestly don't know enough about it. But hey. If he really was going to do something and they stopped it, okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. We're done. We're out.
We're done. Yeah, we're done. Anything else we'll save for another time. So
yeah, we've got a list over here that's growing. Like, it's getting so long. I don't know what we're going to do with this thing.
Well, you know, I drop a. So the behind the scenes stuff. Every week, there's new stuff added to the list, and I label the stuff from the last 2 weeks that we didn't get to, but I drop off the oldest week every time, so it doesn't grow indefinitely.
I know, but it's been growing.
Anyway. Well, that's because there's so many smaller things. There haven't been, like, a bunch of really big, this is the only thing to talk about this week in a while.
True, true.
Anyway, that's a show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us once again. If you're listening to us for the first time, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get the feedback from you. We're on Facebook. Look for us at Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook, and you can comment there. Tell us what you think. If you like it, if you don't like it, well, you know, be gentle if you don't like it. We really, you know, tell us you like us, you know. Even
that's okay. If you think we suck, I mean, let us know too. I'd like to hear somebody go and just, you know, rip us apart for once too. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it does.
Tell us we suck. Tell me how. I'm okay. I'm a big boy. Listen to it.
Just no visuals, please.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, contact us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. If you did like the show, share us on Facebook with your friends. We'd love to have more people listen. If you don't like Facebook, you can also reach us on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U. We'd love to talk to you there. And if you don't like social media at all and want to send us a comment anyway, you can email me personally. I'm Abulsme at Abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. And we'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, tell your friends to listen. And hey, enjoy the week. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.